Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 11th. Businesses harbor expansion hopes. Many Midland companies say they plan to expand by over 15% in the next 3 years. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. A healthy oil and gas industry is fueling plans for expansion among Midland businesses. Sammy Steele Thomas, business retention and expansion coordinator with the Midland Development Corporation, reported to board members this week that 83.6% of the 70 businesses she has contacted told her they plan to expand by over 15% over the next 3 years. At the same time, 14.9% also plan to expand, but by less than 15%, and the remaining 1% plan to remain the same. She told the Reporter Telegram the companies looking to expand covered a wide range of industries, including oil and gas. That percentage is down slightly from 2022, when 88% of the 90 companies Thomas surveyed reported plans to expand by over 15% in the next 3 years. While that number is down from 2022, she said, quote, "Nonetheless, these businesses are expecting to grow or maintain where they are rather than stop or decrease operations," end quote. Quote, "I think coming out of COVID-19 and having oil do well in 2022, businesses were bouncing back and growing faster than maybe they had anticipated," she added. Hence, why the entrepreneurs I talked with expected their businesses to grow by more than 15% in the next few years. This year, more businesses shared how they plan to grow by less than 15% over the next 3 years, end quote. Part of her role at the MDC is to make businesses aware of the resources available to help with business startups or expansions. One of those resources is the University of Texas Permian Basin's Office of Innovation and Commercialization. The MDC is partnering with UTPB on an incubator and makerspace agreement, committing $2 million to help renovate UTPB's Center for Energy and Economic Diversification at State Highway 191 and Farm to Market Road 1788. Brian Shedd, executive director of the office, told a Reporter Telegram by email his office works in four primary areas. Technology transfer has to do with the management of intellectual property generated at UTPB through research and education activities. However, this also supports local businesses with information about intellectual property management and commercialization through seminars such as the IP workshop, which was last held back in 2022, but another workshop will be organized for this year. Startup support. This falls into two categories: UTPB startups created by faculty, staff, or students, often based on their research or educational interests. For instance, the office helps run the UTPB student-made store, which is an online website where student creators can market and sell their works. External startups, which can find a home at the business incubator at the newly remodeled Seed Building, which has office space, lab space, and manufacturing resources. The Seed Building is also home to the Small Business Development Center, which provides a lot of resources for small businesses throughout the Permian Basin. Industry collaboration. works in both directions, trying to match faculty with local businesses for collaboration opportunities and fielding scientific inquiries from companies to find them good technical support at the university. Product development. Another resource for small businesses, especially those working in technology-based fields, are the manufacturing resources available at the seed, which include a prototype lab, which is a makerspace that includes 3D printers, 3D scanners, laser cutters, and other equipment for prototyping, and the Advanced Manufacturing Center, or AMC, which has more sophisticated manufacturing and characterization equipment that can be available to companies on a contract basis. Regulators suspend disposal well permits. Move aimed at reducing quakes in West Texas. The story was written by Carlos Nogueros Ramos of the Texas Tribune. The state's oil and gas regulatory agency last month suspended nearly two dozen permits that let companies inject salt water into the ground, a routine industry practice that regulators said has contributed to the rising frequency and magnitude of earthquakes in West Texas. The permits are set to expire in early January. They apply to 23 disposal wells holding hundreds of thousands of barrels of produced water, a toxic brine found in the deep recesses of rock rich in crude oil. Produced water flows up to the surface during crude oil extraction, and although amounts vary, drilling for oil can return enormous volumes of the liquid. A 2022 report found that Texas alone generated 3.9 billion barrels of produced water from oil and gas extraction. The Railroad Commission of Texas, which regulates oil and gas in the state, instructed major companies, including Chevron, Cimarex Energy, BPX Midstream, NGL Water Solutions Permian, LLC, Black Buck Resources, and CPB Water, to no longer dispose of salt water in Reeves and Culberson counties in an effort to reduce earthquakes in the region. According to the Railroad Commission, seven earthquakes occurred in Reeves and Culberson counties in 2023. In November, the U.S. Geological Survey recorded a 5.2 magnitude earthquake in the region, which tied for the fourth strongest seismic event in Texas history. The process of injecting salt water back into the ground, quote, is likely contributing to recent seismic activity, the Railroad Commission has said. Storing produced water in deep underground rock formations is one of the few ways oil and gas operators can get rid of the contaminated salty mixture. These wells lie in pockets of rock formations underground. Quote, the water has to go somewhere, said Robert Trenum, a senior lecturer and geologist at the University of Texas Permian Basin, in an interview about seismic activity in the region. But when the chemical compound is pumped into wedges already full of water from previous injections, it increases the pressure above the surrounding rock, contributing to seismic activity, Trenum said. Treating produced water for desalinization is an alternative to disposal wells, but is less affordable. Oil and gas companies have also used produced water for hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, which consists of injecting water in high-pressure tanks to break up rocks and release crude oil and other reserves. Quote, the obvious thing that we're all doing is you try to recycle all the water you possibly can, said Laura Capper, CEO of Energy Makers Advisory Group, an oil and gas consulting firm. Everybody's pretty much doing that, end quote. However, the amount of water required for hydraulic fracturing only accounts for a fraction of the produced water that surfaces to the ground during crude oil extraction, leaving oil and gas operators with plenty of water they still need to get rid of. It is unclear whether the companies whose permits lapsed will continue to rely on other saltwater disposal wells in the region. Quote, "We're on kind of a collision course with timelines," Capper said, referring to an increased urgency among some oil and gas operators to find alternative methods to store produced water. Capper added that she and other oil and gas operators are waiting on long-term guidance from the Railroad Commission. Quote, "We need to find a solution today," she said. In 2021, the Railroad Commission created a map that tracks earthquakes in the Permian Basin, which acknowledged the relationship between saltwater injection and the recurrent earthquakes in the region. The commission said it would continue to order companies to reduce their output of produced water if injection is likely to be or determined to be contributing to seismic activity, the Railroad Commission said. The commission has since established a number of measures to reduce earthquakes, including expanding the seismic response map to include more saltwater disposal wells, capping the amount of produced water companies can inject into the ground, and revoking well permits. Scientists have said they are not sure whether reducing the number of saltwater disposal wells will diminish seismic activity. The Texas Tribune is a member-supported nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texans on state politics and policy. Learn more at texastribune.org. Business Buzz. Best of Midland's Shoot Chuck discusses podcasting, digital marketing. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Ryan Shuchuk from Best of Midland discussed assisting local businesses through digital content creation, the Best of Midland podcast, and 40 Wolves Studios at Founders Blend on Wednesday at Midland College. Best of Midland is an online business catalog owned by Shuchuk and his wife Tara Avery, that includes up-to-date local business hours, locations, events, and deals. The pair also hosts the Best of Midland podcast and owns 40 Wolves Studios. The Best of Midland podcast is an audible and visual podcast that invites local business owners or local figures to discuss a wide array of topics. The podcast had 12 million listeners in 2023. Shuchuk calls long-form video content like visual podcasts a content juggernaut for local businesses that don't require a major investment. Quote, "If our clients today, especially on the podcasting side, they can come in, sit down for 2 hours a month, essentially making two episodes, and that can turn into a month's worth of content on social media, where I know everybody wants to be," Shuchuk said. "Views are the currency today. We specialize on getting eyeballs and getting views," end quote. Shuchuk and Avery provide local businesses without an abundance of advertising revenue on the platform to create a variety of social media content. The Best of Midland duo can take the content from a podcast episode and create blog articles for business owners, LinkedIn articles, and more digital marketing materials. Businesses featured on the Best of Midland podcast will also improve their search engine optimization. Shuchuk showed screenshots where he Googled Midland Run Crew on the first page of results, the Best of Midland podcast. YouTube video showed up with Midland Run Crew's page on Best of Midland's website attached underneath, and a LinkedIn article based on the content discussed in their hour-long podcast episode with Robert Gomez, Midland Run Crew's founder. With a professional background in search engine optimization, Shuchuk recognizes keywords that Google and YouTube wanderers type most frequently and tailors their content to those searches. Recently, Best of Midland released a podcast episode featuring Ryan and Ashton Hooper of Hoop and Barrel and Hops and Bubbles Mobile Bartending. Quote, "If your business wants to rank higher on search engines, especially if you are a local brick and mortar, take advantage," Shuchuk said. Best of Midland wants to create digital content for business owners that has captivating appeal to a wide audience. Shuchuk calls their content agnostic, meaning a viewer doesn't have to live in Midland to enjoy a social media podcast clip or the like. Shuchuk also discussed 40 Wolves Studios, which is a social media marketing partner that provides a fully equipped podcast studio, full editing services, and social media content creation. Making history. A Grand Ole Opry debut for Treaty Oak Revival, a testament to the West Texas group's creativity, one-of-a-kind demeanor. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. 4 years as a music journalist in the capital city taught me how to tell the difference between a band that possesses something special and one that doesn't. Sharp vocals and catchy tunes rank high in necessity, but crews boasting a loud volume of relatability and nostalgia captivate audiences undeniably. The West Texas gang making up Treaty Oak Revival goes beyond. Born from rowdy, dust-filled roots, the Texas red dirt country and southern rock influences weaved in the group's musical genius seamlessly flow from one member to the next. Comprised of Sam Canty, Lance Vanley, Jeremiah Vanley, Cody Holloway, and Andrew Carey, Treaty Oak Revival paves a rock-hard path of evident originality and unequaled storytelling. With over 1.6 million monthly listeners on Spotify and only 5 years under their belt, a Grand Ole Opry debut just makes sense. An invitation-only stage, the Opry stands as the country's biggest honor. Megastars like Loretta Lynn, Hank Williams, Carrie Underwood, Willie Nelson, Dolly Parton, and Garth Brooks stood in the same wooden circle to be graced by Treaty Oak Revival on February 6th. Quote, "The first time we were in Nashville, I met a guy at a concert who puts on the Highway 30 Music Fest. Unbeknownst to me, his wife is on the Opry team for finding talent. He got me in contact with her, and I started inquiring, but it usually takes bands quite some time to be invited," Eli Kidd, Treaty Oak's tour manager, explained. "She got with her team. It's a whole group who decides. She put us in front of them. They looked at our stats and credentials and decided they'd extend us an offer," end quote. Beyond the Gatlin brothers from Seminole, next month's debut makes Treaty Oak Revival the first West Texas ensemble to perform on the iconic platform. Of course, a performance of this magnitude calls for special preparation, right? Not for this motley crew. They'll take the next 27 days the same way they take every day, unapologetically authentic and together as a family. Quote, "Our music can be a little explicit sometimes, and our show can be a little off the wall, but we're obviously going to give the Opry the respect it deserves. We'll play some of our clean songs, which also happen to be our most popular," Candy said. "Probably dress nice for this one. Maybe wear a collared shirt and our nicest pair of jeans. Or my denim suit," Family joked. Nevertheless, Treaty Oak assured me they'd maintain their pre-show ritual of always messing up hands in the middle, followed by Vanley being utterly confused on what everybody should have said. The talent, bound to be showcased in just 3.5 short weeks, lives as a testament to Treaty Oak Revival's creativity, one-of-a-kind demeanor, and naturally, the dream come true. Quote, I grew up listening to country music and knowing some of the people who have been inside that circle. It's an honor, Candy admitted. Treaty Oak Revival plans to perform No Vacancy and Ode to Bourbon off of their 2021 freshman full-length No Vacancy. No more. Stay up to date with Treaty Oak Revival and how to catch their upbeat performance at TreatyOakRevival.com or the band's Facebook and Instagram pages.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 11th, 2024. Happenings. Three things to do in Midland this weekend, January 12th through 14th. By Morgan Taylor Thomas. Support Cowboys and Cowgirls. Coming in hot is weekend 2 of the Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo. With performances every night, the rodeo portion of the event comes packed with bull riding, mutton busting, barrel racing, horse bucking, a horse ballet, and more. Tickets can be bought at sandhillssr.com. Friday, all performances begin at 7:30 p.m. at 218 West 46th Street. Show off your muscles. Local Animal Rescue Fix West Texas is hosting Cars and Coffee at Mid-Cities Church in hopes of getting Midlanders from all backgrounds together for a special fundraising event. Participants can enter any car or cars of their choosing for $10. Spectators are free to enjoy the four-wheeled and four-legged views. Free coffee and donuts are provided, and all proceeds go back to Fix West Texas. Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon at 8700 State Highway 191. Jam with the Panhandlers. West Texas supergroup, the Panhandlers, are kicking off the new season at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center with a music lover's paradise. Made up of John Bowman, Josh Abbott, Cleto Cordero, and William Clark Green, the band offers listeners a taste red dirt country mixed with some classic beats and rockin' vocals. Tickets can be purchased from WagnerKnoll.com. Sunday, doors at 7, tunes at 8, at 1310 North FM 1788. What's Up with Midland? By Morgan Taylor Thomas. Arts Council of Midland. Conversations in Fine Art. Tim Hare, Landscape, January 17th. The Open Show, January 18th. Wire-wrapped jewelry class, January 19th. At the Blue Door, live music with McKenna Kosowski, Saturday. The Office Trivia, January 25th. At Centennial Library, Adult Coloring Group, January 22nd and 29th. On Colorado Street, Downtown Farmers Market, new location every Saturday. At Golf Course Road Church of Christ, Food Truck Fridays, every Friday. At the Horseshoe, Midland County Livestock Annual Show, Thursday through Saturday. West Texas Wedding Expo, January 21st. Permian Basin Hiring Event, January 25th. West Texas Hunting Extravaganza, January 27th. At La Hacienda, La Fiera de Ojinaga, January 26th. At Riley's Bar and Grill, Burgers and Bands, every Wednesday. Sand Hills Stock Show and Rodeo Performances, Thursday through Saturday. At the Senior Center, Line Dancing Class every Tuesday. At Sibley Nature Center, Theater Thursday. At Tall City Brewing Company, Geeks Who Drink Trivia every Tuesday. At Texas Sun Winery, Paint With Me, January 16th. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Ron White, Thursday. The Panhandlers, Sunday. West Texas Winds Spring Recital, January 18th. Breaking Benjamin, Unplugged, January 23rd. Brian Regan, January 25th. Jason Fabus Trio, January 27th. The Board Teachers Comedy Tour, January 28th. Pretty Woman the Musical, January 30th. At the Waystone, Cookie Encounter Workshop, January 20th. Magnificent Me exhibit to go on display. Visitors can get to learn more about different systems of the human body by Ben Schaefer. Magnificent Me, a Midland County exhibit on the biology of the human body, will be on view at Centennial Library starting Friday. Visitors can interact with a variety of medical technologies and gain hands-on experience of different human body systems, such as the muscular and skeletal systems, the cardio and respiratory systems, digestive system, and nervous system, according to Midland County. Midland County stated that some of the exhibit's highlights include using a wand to see an ultrasound scan, using special coils to learn the difference between hot and cold temperatures, and seeing how the brain processes information. The exhibit will remain on view through April 5th, according to Midland County. Midland County is asking educators who are interested in scheduling a field trip to the exhibit to call the exhibit and program coordinator at 432-742-7435 or complete the field trip request form.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 11th. Miss Versy May Graves passed away on December 28th. She was born to George and Benny M. Cook on February 28th, 1936, in Cossey, Texas. Versy grew up in Coss, attending public school. She was placed at San Gabriel Rehabilitation Center in Round Rock, Texas. Prior to that, she was a member of Holy Trinity Church in Midland. She worked as a sitter for the elderly and was a foster grandparent. Versy was preceded in death by her husband, William Graves, parents George and Benny M. Cook, brother Sammy L. Cook, daughter Mary E. Graves, Sheila S. Graves, grandson Michael J. Graves. She is survived by her son, Billy C. Graves, of Round Rock, Texas, Betty V. Graves, Margaret E. Gray, and granddaughter Summer D. Straker of Midland. Services are entrusted to the care of Mayberry Funeral Home. Jessica Shanae Williams of Midland passed away on January 4th at the age of 36. Jessica was born to Edith Hall and Cleveland Williams Sr. on August 7, 1987, in Midland. Preceding Jessica in death are her grandparents, Charlie and Shirley Hall, and Cleveland Sr. and Dorothy Williams. She is survived by her mother, Edith Hall, and father, Cleveland Williams Jr., son, Caden Gibran Williams, siblings, Jacoby DeMonique Williams, Jeremy Dwayne Hall, Jasmine Cherise Williams, Montreal McCoy, nephew King Williams, aunts Cynthia Hall, Charlene Harding, Vicki Hall, Lita Richardson, Janice Stafford, Dornice Johnson, Amy Dale, Peaches Williams, uncles Wendell Corey, Perry Williams, Ricky Williams. A viewing and visitation will be held from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, January 12th, at Mayberry Funeral Home, 406 East Illinois Avenue in Midland. A celebration of life service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 13th, at Goodwill Baptist Church, 1001 South Main Street in Midland. Claudia Ann Wood Gunter, age 85, born in Abilene, Texas, passed away on Wednesday, January 3rd, in Midland. Services are being arranged by Mayberry Funeral Home in Midland. Hughleen Brown, age 70, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, January 4th, in Midland. A visitation and viewing will be held from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday, January 11th, at Mayberry Funeral Home, 406 East Illinois Avenue in Midland. A celebration of life will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, January 12th, at Goodwill Baptist Church, 1001 South Main Street in Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, January 11th. Montessori Mastery Kids Pay It Forward. About 24 students at Montessori Mastery School of Odessa made a big difference in the lives of homeless families Tuesday by presenting $1,071.20 to Family Promise, all in dimes. Family Promise helps families experiencing homelessness by providing meals, shelter, transportation, and referrals to local social services, said Kara Evanson Dorothy, Executive Director for Family Promise of Odessa. Also on hand with Evanson Dorothy were Yvonne Marufo, driver and case manager, and two moms served by the organization. A hallway at the school featured a table with all the dimes collected in clear plastic containers, piggy banks that the first through third graders made, and a handmade sign that said Dimes for Dreams for Family Promise with the amount collected on it. The kids also got thank you gifts from Family Promise. Teacher Jody Braswell said when she and co-teacher Jamie Halsell introduced the project to the students, they started off with books about homeless kids and families, and then students made piggy banks. We were going to finish up right before Christmas, and the kids said, can't we take them home so that when Grandma comes, she can put money in the piggy bank? Braswell said. The students took the banks home and brought them back after the holiday break. We've been trying to do service projects throughout the year, and this is our third project that we've done. We talked about Christmas presents, and the kids were talking about how there are some kids that don't have things. I told them about Family Promise, and when they wanted Miss Carrie to come talk to them, and then it just grew. One of the kids said that if we just got dimes and then it was dimes for dreams, Braswell said. She added that the students were amazing, wonderful, sensitive, and caring. Two of the moms that Family Promise is helping came to Montessori Mastery, and the students asked them questions about what their children like, where they go to school, what they do when it's cold outside, and more. The funds go back into providing diapers, meals for the families, clothing needs, personal hygiene, and cleaning products, among other items. Evans and Dorothy said, Family Promise in Odessa is serving 12 people currently, 9 children and 3 moms. When we first met with the children and they were telling us how they were reading books about homeless families, the young children really wanted to get involved, she said. Anyone interested in helping or serving Family Promise may contact Evanson Dorothy at 432-934-6693. Texas regulators limit oil and gas disposal wells in bid to reduce earthquakes in West Texas. The state's oil and gas regulatory agency last month suspended nearly 24 permits that let companies inject salt water into the ground, a routine industry practice that regulators said has contributed to the rising frequency and magnitude of earthquakes in West Texas. The permits are set to expire in early January. They apply to 23 disposal wells holding hundreds of thousands of barrels of produced water, a toxic brine found in the deep recesses of rock rich in crude oil. Produced water flows up to the surface during crude oil extraction, and although amounts vary, drilling for oil can return enormous volumes of the liquid. A 2022 report found that Texas alone generated 3.9 billion barrels of produced water from oil and gas extraction. The Railroad Commission of Texas, which regulates oil and gas in the state, instructed major companies including Chevron, Cimarex Energy, BPX Midstream, NGL Water Solutions, Permian LLC, Blackbuck Resources, and CPB Water to no longer dispose of salt water in Reeves and Culberson counties in an effort to reduce earthquakes in the region. According to the Railroad Commission, 7 earthquakes occurred in Reeves and Culberson counties in 2023. In November, the U.S. Geological Survey recorded a 5.2 magnitude earthquake in the region, which tied for the 4th strongest seismic event in Texas history. The process of injecting salt water back into the ground is likely contributing to recent seismic activity, the Railroad Commission has said. Storing produced water in deep underground rock formations is one of the few ways oil and gas operators can get rid of the contaminated, salty mixture. These wells lie in pockets of rock formations underground. The water has to go somewhere, said Robert Trentum, a senior lecturer and geologist at the University of Texas Permian Basin, in an interview about seismic activity in the region. But when the chemical compound is pumped into wedges already full of water from previous injections, it increases the pressure above the surrounding rock, contributing to seismic activity, Trentum said. Treating produced water for desalinization is an alternative to disposal wells, but is less affordable. Oil and gas companies have also used produced water for hydraulic fracturing or fracking, which consists of injecting water in high-pressure tanks to break up rocks and release crude oil and other reserves. The obvious thing that we are doing is you try to recycle all the water you possibly can, said Laura Capper, CEO of Energy Makers Advisory Group, an oil and gas consulting firm. Everybody's pretty much doing that. However, the amount of water required for hydraulic fracturing only accounts for a fraction of the produced water that surfaces to the ground during crude oil extraction, leaving oil and gas operators with plenty of water they still need to get rid of. It is unclear whether the companies whose permits lapsed will continue to rely on other saltwater disposal wells in the region. We're on kind of a collision course with timelines, Capper said, referring to increased urgency among oil and gas operators to find alternative methods to store produced water. Capper added that she and other oil and gas operators are waiting on long-term guidance from the Railroad Commission. We need to find a solution today, she said. In 2021, the Railroad Commission created a map that tracks earthquakes in the Permian Basin, which acknowledged the relationship between saltwater injection and the recurrent earthquakes in the region. The commission said it would continue to order companies to reduce their output of produced water if injection is likely to be or determined to be contributing to seismic activity, the Railroad Commission said. The commission has since established a number of measures to reduce earthquakes, including expanding the seismic response map to include more saltwater disposal wells, capping the amount of produced water companies can inject into the ground, and revoking well permits. Scientists have said they are not sure whether reducing the number of saltwater disposal wells will diminish seismic activity. Holiday gathering and a new variant have driven up COVID cases globally, UN Health Agency said. The head of the UN Health Agency said Wednesday, holiday gatherings and the spread of the most prominent variant globally led to increased transmission of COVID-19 last month. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said nearly 10,000 deaths were reported in December, while hospital admissions during the month jumped 42%. In nearly 50 countries, mostly in Europe and the Americas, that shared such trend information. Although 10,000 deaths a month is far less than the peak of the pandemic, this level of preventable deaths is not acceptable, the World Health Organization Director General told reporters from its headquarters in Geneva. He said it was certain that cases were on the rise in other places that haven't been reporting, calling on governments to keep up surveillance and provide continued access to treatments and vaccines. Tedros said the JN1 variant was now the most prominent in the world. It is an Omicron variant, so current vaccines should still provide some protection. Maria van Kerkhove, technical lead at WHO for COVID-19, cited an increase in respiratory disease across the globe during the coronavirus, but also flu, rhinovirus, and pneumonia. We expect those trends to continue into January through the winter months in the Northern Hemisphere, she said, while noting increases in COVID-19 in the Southern Hemisphere, where it's now summer. While bouts of coughs, sniffling, fever, and fatigue in the winter are nothing new, Van Kerkhove said this year in particular, we are seeing co-circulation of many different types of pathogens. WHO officials recommend that people get vaccinated when possible, wear masks, and make sure indoor areas are well ventilated. The vaccines may not stop you being infected, but the vaccines are certainly reducing significantly your chance of being hospitalized or dying, said Michael Ryan, head of emergencies at WHO. ERCOT issues weather watch. ERCOT has issued a weather watch from January 15th through 17th due to forecasted extreme cold weather across the ERCOT region, higher electrical demand, and the potential for lower reserves. Grid conditions are expected to be normal during an ERCOT weather watch. ERCOT continues to monitor conditions closely and will deploy all available tools to manage the grid, continuing a reliability-first approach to operations. In 2023, January peak demand was 65,632 megawatts, with the current all-time peak demand record of 85,508 megawatts set in August 10, 2023. ERCOT encourages everyone to sign up for grid condition notifications through the Texas Advisory and Notification System, TXANS. Texans can also monitor real-time and extended grid conditions at ERCOT.com. What is an ERCOT weather watch? An ERCOT weather watch is an advanced notification of forecasted significant weather with higher electrical demand and the potential for lower reserves. At this time, grid conditions are expected to be normal, and there is not a current expectation of an energy emergency. Texans should continue to monitor real-time and extended grid conditions at ERCOT.com. No action is needed. You can monitor current and extended grid conditions on ERCOT.com. Did you know reducing electric use during peak demand times can help you save and lower demand on the grid? Energy saving tips can be found on the TXANS webpage. Stay updated. Sign up for TXANS notification on the TXANS webpage. You can also subscribe to ERCOT emergency alerts, which are not sent through Texans notifications, and download the ERCOT mobile app for additional notifications. RRC rolls out framework for pilot studies to recycle produced water. The Railroad Commission has created a framework for a pilot program that could greatly enhance environmental protection in Texas with the potential to recycle produced water safely and economically, according to a Wednesday news release. Produced water is a byproduct of what comes to the surface during oil and gas production, and the produced water recycling framework will provide a regulatory program for operators to assess the effectiveness and the suitability of applying treated produced water for beneficial purposes. Operators will apply for authorization to conduct pilot studies, and RRC will issue a permit or letter of authorization. They would compile data of how treated produced water can be reused in certain activities that are safe and protective of human health and the environment. Ultimately, the potential exists to reduce the amount of produced water that gets injected back into the ground, which can help reduce incidents of seismicity, as well as developing a potential water source for use above ground. This is another example of how we stay at the forefront of our critical mission of protecting public safety and the environment while we regulate an industry that is crucial to the state's economy, said Wei Wang, RRC Executive Director, in the release. This framework opens up the potential to use produced water in ways that have never been before seen in Texas, which is a win-win for the oil and gas industry, the environment, and Texans. The commission will focus attention on the effectiveness of treatment technologies and examine proper methods for gathering, storing, treating, testing, and documenting how treated water quality evolves and is controlled in each pilot facility. Treated fluid will not be allowed to be discharged to surface water during the pilot study. The produced water recycling framework is a starting point and will evolve over time in collaboration with the work of others as the academic community, consortia, industry, and community leaders. Treated liquid will not be allowed to be discharged to surface water during the pilot studies. The information obtained by these pilot studies can be used to develop more focused regulation on produced water recycling and help guide future legislation. CTE success rates highlighted. The Career and Technical Education Program in Ector County ISD continues to impact the community and will have a bigger footprint with the coming of a new facility in the next few years. During the January 9th Ector County ISD Board of Trustees meeting, they received an update on the programs. We looked at some specific data elements, things that are happening in CTE, Superintendent Scott Murray said during his media call Wednesday. We talked about the 27 different pathways that we are offering, and then we had a focus on our new CTE facility and kind of laid out the groundwork of that exciting opportunity that's contained within the bond. Financed by Proposition 1 of the November 7th bond, the site location is off Murphy Street with nearest cross street of South Meadow. Gifted by Grow Odessa, the site is 37.9 acres and valued at $2.8 million. Proposition 1 was for $424,263,000. The whole bond was for $436,109,000. The CTE Center has an $80 million price tag. Executive Director of Career and Technical Education Ryan Merritt said at the board meeting that the center will be home for 400 high school students, with 2,000 students transported every day for CTE programs. It will be a joint-use facility with Odessa College and a world-class faculty that could be the model for educational workforce development. In the year 2023, 648 students graduated from high school with an industry-recognized certification, simply meaning they went through a career and technical education pathway during their high school career and at the same time earned a high school diploma and industry-based certification that they could take into the work world, Murray said. He added that they also looked at dual credit and dual enrollment. Thanks to our partnership with Odessa College, we have a large number of students that are currently taking dual credit courses. They are courses in which a student earns a high school credit as well as a college credit. And again, that's because of the partnership that we have with Odessa College, Miri said. In the 2023 school year, they had 2,892 students involved in dual credit courses. That's almost 3,000 students that are taking high school courses and college courses. That one course counts twice, so they were earning high school credit and college credit at the same time. That benefits those students. It helps them at the college level. Those courses are typically more rigorous than other courses students would take. Certainly, parents like that because those courses are free to our students, and it certainly saves some college opportunities. In fact, many of our students will graduate from high school with both a high school diploma and an AA, Associate of Arts degree from Odessa College, Murray said. In terms of the graduation rate, he said students involved in career and technical education graduate at a higher level when compared to students who aren't. Once again, learning that when kids are engaged specifically at the high school level, their likelihood of graduating from high school far surpasses students that are not engaged. We see that vividly in our career and technical education programs. So thank you to the teachers and the directors, those that are part of our CTE programming in ECISD. Well over half of our students are engaged in some type of career and technical education during their high school career, and we're seeing success, Murray said. We are appreciative of our community. Career and technical education will continue to expand as we bring a brand new facility online in the coming years, thanks to the passage of the 2023 bond referendum, he said. January is School Board Appreciation Month. School board members in Ector County ISD are elected to serve and represent their community. They meet twice a month regularly, and this is an unpaid opportunity. Many folks across our state think that our school board members earn a salary for their service, but in fact, they do not. They serve just out of the kindness of their hearts, Mary said. They are, of course, elected officials, but serve our community. We're grateful for their service, and so if any of you are aware of one of our school board members, if you know them or are familiar with them, I encourage you, especially this month, to demonstrate your appreciation for them. A phone call, an email, a text message, but in some way acknowledge the real good work of the trustees of ECISD during this month of January. He noted that Monday schools and district office will be closed in observance of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday.
This is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 11th. Woman took in parents, but now wants them out. Dear Abby, I'm a single parent raising five young kids alone. I own my home, have a good job, and have done well financially. 5 years ago, after several years of making bad financial decisions, my parents showed up on my doorstep. Their house had been foreclosed on. I had given much advice leading up to it. I have also offered them advice since then to help get them on their feet. Little of it has been taken. Living with them has triggered issues from my childhood, most of which they contributed to but take no responsibility for. They do pay a little to me in rent, help with housework, and sometimes watch my children, but past issues are still evident, and I don't want that example around my kids. I have made clear for months that they have overstayed their welcome, but they argue with me and take no steps to get on their feet. I have tried having meetings with them and my siblings. These end in shouting matches and nothing changes. I know if I evict them, it will likely sever the relationship. Is that my only option? Signed, Disgruntled Daughter. Dear daughter, you are kind to take your parents in, but you are being taken advantage of. This is a problem you should discuss with an attorney, because after having camped out in your home for the length of time your parents have, it may indeed take a formal eviction to get them out. Do not expect to be thanked for the help you have given them all this time, and, if I read your letter correctly, do not expect any assistance from your siblings. Do what you must for yourself and your children. You have given your parents enough. Dear Abby, this morning I found my husband has been chatting on his phone with a much younger woman. Since then, I have been wondering if I should ask him about it. He just retired, but I'm still working and my job is in the afternoon and evening. He's an extrovert who loves being around people. Should I be worried he's cheating on me? We've been married 30 years and have a grown child together. Our sex life isn't good. For many years, we worked opposite shifts, so we didn't go to bed and get up at the same time. Now we do, but he's alone during the afternoon and evening. I don't have any friends I trust enough to ask, and I'm certainly not saying anything to family. Can you help? Signed, Suspicious in New Mexico. Dear Suspicious, because you know her age, I'm guessing you already know quite a bit about this much younger woman. If you ask your husband about this, you will have to disclose that you looked at his phone. Spouses don't usually do that unless they are suspicious something might be going on. If you think what he's been doing could be a threat to your marriage, you're going to have to come clean and tell him you feel threatened by what you saw. Better to confront than ignore and hope a problem will go away by itself.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.